And this KABU program has been made possible in part by KABU Foundation members and a grant from UpWest Arts, presenting Scottish fiddler Alistair Fraser and Celeste Natalie Haas in their first Portland concert, Saturday, January 28th at the Aladdin Theater. This all-ages show starts at 8 p.m., and tickets are available at the Aladdin box office or Ticketmaster. Call 503-224-4400 or Ticketmaster.com. More information at upwest@olympus.net. Coming up next, Positively Revolting.
Was one of my favorite songs by Lorena McKennitt called Tango to Evora. a very beautiful song that was actually used as the theme music for a wonderful video called The Burning Times, which is rather a sobering subject, but still a film world we're seeing, made by a Canadian filmmaker called Donna Reed. And a wonderful film, if you haven't seen it. It's been around since the 90s, I guess. And Donna Reed and Starhawk have collaborated on a number of films that have been shown up in Canada. So making a whole series of films exploring goddess religion and that sort of thing. So welcome to the show. It is Friday the 13th, and it's cold and wet out there, as befits Friday the 13th. Actually, Friday the 13th has gotten a bad rap in our culture in a lot of ways. It's considered to be unlucky because in ancient times it was considered to be the day of the goddess, since Friday is named after Freya, the Norse goddess, who represents the power of women. And 13, of course, was the number of moons in a year, which was associated with goddess religion. So that meant Friday the 13th was the day when the goddess was thought to be most prominent or whatever. So hence its unlucky designation. So a little superstition busting here on Positively Revolting Talk Radio today. I'm Melody Silverwolf, and my lovely co-host Ani Haynes is on vacation, and she's somewhere doing something fun. Maybe she went to the beach. Maybe she went to Brighton Bush. Maybe she went. Who knows? Who knows where she is? But she's having a good time. She won't be here today. So I will be joined momentarily by my lovely friend Chris Andre, who is going to join me in this conversation that we're going to have today. But first, I have a couple of announcements. And the first one is about an event that's happening today from 11 to 2. If you are a medical marijuana patient in the state of Oregon and you live in the Portland area, it would behoove you to come to this meeting. As you probably know, the laws have changed. As of January 1st, the whole program has been updated, and the laws are quite different to your benefit, but certainly you really need to know what the laws are. And so today from 11 to 2 at the Department of Human Services office, which is at 800 Northeast Oregon Street, which is in the Lloyd Center area, there's going to be an informational meeting. And Pam Salisbury, who's the program director, will be attending this meeting, and there will be several attorneys there. Lee Berger and Paul Loney, among others, will be attending, and all kinds of information. So if you want to be informed, know the law, and protect yourself from, you know, unwanted visits by the police because you're not following the law correctly, then do come to this meeting today. 11 to 2, 800 Northeast Oregon Street, and there will be refreshments served. So I certainly hope that we get to see you there. And then, excuse me, tomorrow at noon at Mount Tabor Theater, that's at 49th and Hawthorne, there will be a meeting for those persons who are either medical marijuana patients or caregivers. And so that meeting will be, it's a regular monthly function, and there should be a movie shown. There usually is, if they get around to showing it. And so that's another event you might want to consider attending. And of course, you know, there's so many things going on in the world. When I was thinking about what I wanted to talk about today, I felt like there was just, there was this long list of names that's just floating around in the news, you know. We've all been hearing about Abramoff and Alito and Bush and Rice and Rumsfeld and Fitzgerald and Rove and Libby and Cheney, and it just goes on and on and on. And it's, you know, Tom DeLay and the Russian mafia, and it, you know, it's who's done what to whom. And, you know, there's just no end to this. We could investigate all these people until the end of time, and there would still be crimes to uncover. It just goes on and on and on and on. And should we put Alito on the Supreme Court? And, you know, should we light the Constitution on fire? Well, you know, I just got to the point where I thought, this is just all so ridiculous. We're arguing about these ridiculous things, like which person of reprehensible character and criminal behavior should we appoint to this office or put on the Supreme Court? Or, you know, is this criminal, in the Bush administration worse than this criminal in the Bush administration? It just seems like so much pointless nattering to me. Like, why are we focusing on you know, which criminal we should put on the Supreme Court. Like, how did we get here? What kind of a country do we live in that we're sitting here arguing over whether so-and-so is too much of a criminal to be in office or too much of a criminal to hold this job? Or, you know, was Michael Brown criminally responsible for what happened to Katrina, or was he just lame and neglectful? Why are we even arguing about this? Is this why we have a government? Is this why we created our society? Is this what, is this what all the people who have come before us wanted for their children and great-grandchildren and, you know, so on and so on? I don't think so. I think we've really lost our way in this country. It's a very confusing time. There's a lot of things going on in the world, and not just politically. And there's a lot of things going on in a more, nebulous way that aren't quite so obvious that are driving a lot of these things. And, you know, I think there's a lot of reasons why we got to where we are now and how we managed to perpetuate that. We've talked about these issues on this show many times. We've talked about, you know, the fact that people are in a stupor from too much TV and too much propaganda from Bush and people before him. And we've talked about how people are overwhelmed and, you know, working too many jobs and don't have time for just sitting still and thinking about things and doing their laundry and civic life and raising their kids and all that kind of thing. We've talked about how the educational system in this country has been totally undermined, and that's not an accident. And the fact that, you know, as lofty a personage as James Madison pointed out, that you can't have a democracy without an educated populace, which is oh so true. And there's all kinds of reasons why things are the way they are today. You know, the rise of corporatism and after World War II, the changeover to a very industrialized society that increasingly values mechanization over the use of people in work. And so people are becoming forced out of their jobs as machines do the jobs that they used to get paid a living wage for. All these things and more. But, you know, even beyond that, a real radical, if you're a radical, you look at things from a radical perspective. You go down to the root. You go out in your garden and you see that a plant looks sickly and you're like, well, this plant is kind of droopy and the leaves are yellow and it's not growing well. So you don't just cut off the yellow leaves and hope it gets better. You realize that there's some kind of a systemic problem with the plant, that it wouldn't be turning yellow and looking droopy and growing poorly unless there was something wrong with it. It's either lacking some nutrient or it has some disease. It's being attacked by some pest or something like that. And so a good gardener gets down on their hands and knees and they look at the plant closely. Maybe they even pull the dirt away from the roots and look down at the roots and see if there's something down there that's causing this distress. And so that's kind of what we need to do today, I think. we need to be radical. We need to take a hard look at the reasons beyond the obvious that we are in this situation, and we need to make some hard decisions about how can we make some radical changes which of these radical changes are going to correct the problem without killing the plant, which of course is always the danger if you get too radical. If you yank the whole plant out, roots and all, to take a good look at it, well, the plant might die. So you can't be too drastic, and yet you have to be fearless. And that's what being a radical is all about. So for those of us who like to think of ourselves as radicals or want to take a radical point of view, I think that would behoove us to do so. But before we go ahead on this one, we've gotten a call urging us to announce these numbers and urging people to call to, these are for Senator Wyden and Smith, to ask them to vote against Alito. I would go further than that, and I would urge them to convey to Mr. Wyden that you want him and the other Democrats to filibuster, which is not looking very likely. And that's just, that's just incomprehensible to me. I called Wyden's office yesterday, or maybe it was the day before, and I got into quite a conversation with his staffer when the staffer told me that Senator Wyden has not yet decided what position he's going to take on Judge Alito, and I just lost it. I was like, what do you mean he hasn't decided what position he's going to take on Alito? Alito doesn't support the Constitution of the United States. I elected Senator Wyden to do a job, and that is to represent me in Washington, and that implies, just by definition, he is supposed to support the Constitution of the United States. Sam Alito does not. And so be prepared for a whole lot of nothing on the other end of the line is what I guess I'm trying to say to you. Especially, I didn't even bother calling Gordon Smith. I'm sure Gordon Smith thinks that Sam Alito is just ducky. And I've certainly called him in the past to urge him to do various things and have gotten, shall we say, a chilly reception. But I urge you to do so anyway. I'm still going to call Smith, and everyone should. But don't be surprised if you get a very lukewarm reaction from Senator Wyden. And I think if enough people call and express shock and outrage that he hasn't even decided whether he's going to vote for Alito or not yet, I would think that after these past few days of the hearings, it should be abundantly clear that Alito is not a candidate that he should be supporting. But at any rate, are your pencils ready? Got them ready? Okay, here come the numbers. Senator Wyden. This is his D.C. office, 202-224-5244. I'll say that again. Wyden, 202-224-5244. And should you not want to make a long-distance call, it's my opinion that this is less effective to call his local office, but I could be wrong, and it is free. 503-326-7525. That's 503-326-7525. And now for Gordon Smith. Here comes his Washington, D.C. number, 202-224-3753. That's 202-224-3753. And his local number is 503-326-3386. Senator Smith, 503-326-3386. And, just because it all just seems so pointless and, I'm ready to throw my hands in the air, doesn't mean I don't still call. But I think it really, as I said earlier, getting back to the topic I was discussing, it does behoove us beyond just calling our senators, which is a good thing to do. And if everybody did it who's listening to the show, it would make a huge difference. Imagine if 50,000 people got on the phone today and called Senator Smith and Senator Wyden. I mean, their switchboard would break. They would be overwhelmed. And I guarantee you that Senator Wyden would vote against Alito if 50,000 people called him and told him to. So there is power in numbers, and it's important that we do these things. But, as I said, it's just not enough. It's not enough to call Wyden and Smith. It's not enough to write letters to the editor. It's not enough to call talk radio. It's not enough. It's just all running around dealing with the symptoms of a bigger disease, and it's time for us to get our gardening shears out and look a little deeper. I do have a caller, so go ahead, caller. You're on the air.
Oh, me?
Yes.
Oh, I just wanted to say, they have a saying in Dutch, politics is more corrupt than the tearing. It's more corrupt than tuberculosis. I thought that would encourage everybody.
Okay.
I did write all your numbers down. Now, it's okay even if you're not a registered voter?
Of course. You're a citizen of the state of Oregon, and he represents you whether you voted for him or not, whether you are registered to vote or not. You know, he is the person who's supposed to be representing your views in Washington.
Oh, okay.
So you absolutely should call him. It has nothing to do with being a registered voter, although, of course, I would urge you to become one. But, no, you don't have to be a registered voter. They won't even ask your name.
Become a registered voter?
Pardon?
I'm a convicted felon. Does that count?
You know, you can still be a registered voter if you've been a convicted felon. Did you know that?
I didn't know that.
Yes, you did. You do. In Oregon, once you've completed your sentence, then you can re-register to vote.
Totally cool.
So absolutely call him. You don't even have to give your name. It'll just ask your zip code. They just want to know where people are calling from.
Yeah, I've got one of those. They gave me a cell phone, and I can call anywhere for free.
Well, yes, I do urge you to call the Washington number because, as I said, it's...
I'll call both of them.
Why not? Why not?
Thanks. You're very, very, very encouraging.
Well, good. And I hope you do register to vote because just because you've been a felon in the past in this state anyway does not preclude you from voting.
Well, I'm reformed now.
That's not true in every state, but it is true here. So, yeah, you should definitely, you know, use your vote if you can.
Okay.
All right. Thanks for calling.
Thank you.
So at any rate, let's get out our pruning shears here and, you know, our digging tool and our insect, you know, biologically correct insect spray and take a look at this. You know, how did we get here? You know, we got here through a lot of people being greedy and being easily flattered. And, you know, humans are, you know, we're weak little monkeys. We are easily tempted by shiny things and by the promise of sexual rewards and the promise of easy money. And, you know, we're easily tempted. And a lot of people have bought into things that they wanted to believe. Denial is huge in the human realm. And, you know, we wanted to believe Reagan and Bush and all these other people who have lied to us. And they're certainly not the only ones who have lied to us. Clinton lied to us. I'm sure Carter did, too. I know for a fact that Nixon and Johnson lied to us and Ford and all those guys. You know, so, you know, we've gotten here through believing a lot of things that we really pretty much knew weren't true, but we wanted to believe them. And so we did. And, you know, that's part of the reason that we got here. But also part of the reason that we got here is because we really believe, we've been taught to believe, but we've convinced ourselves of it, that common people don't have the ability to lead themselves, that they need people who are smarter than they are, richer than they are, older than they are, better educated than they are, whatever, to tell them what to do. And I think that that's not necessarily the truth. I think that's another way that we've ended up in this position is that we've believed a lot of lies about our society and about ourselves, and we need to figure out, you know, what we're really capable of. And one thing that I believe that people really are capable of is making, when they are, you know, in a position where they know they have to make decisions for themselves, that people tend to make pretty good decisions after maybe a few mistakes. It takes a little practice to run your own life and make your own decisions and be responsible for your decisions and then have to take the consequences if it doesn't work out so well. But that's part of what being a mature adult is. And in this society, in America, we're not raised to be full adults who take responsibility for our behavior. We're told what we can do. We're treated like children, and we buy into it. So I think that's a big thing that we need to change. So we do have a caller, and let me give out that number. It's 503-231-8187, and let's talk to that caller now. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hello, that's you.
You know, it's very true that even the common American has, it looks like a large scale. We're all just teenagers in kind of way in our spirituality. But,
exactly.
But what we really, I think, by the time we reach middle age, which I've reached, is our desire for health and long life, which is natural, much like the sex drive and the money drive, health and long life, even that desire, which is both natural and within our spirit, has been perverted into enriching the pharmaceutical companies, among others.
Mm-hmm.
And it's become a disaster, even when we look at ourselves and say, you know, I need to be not only good-looking with my Botox or erect with my Viagra, I need to be healthy and long-lived. And we come to this healthful decision, and our options are limited. The minute we get sick, of course, our options are exquisitely limited by what's available through the world that we've made up and believed in.
Well, and that's a really great point. You know, that's one way that we've surrendered a lot of power over our lives. We've allowed greedy people who run corporations to pollute our atmosphere, to
sell us
food wrapped in plastic. So we've surrendered a lot of power over our health, and we've accepted a lot of things that make us unhealthy. And then, of course, when we actually our body reacts in an illness, then, as you said, you know, we turn to these concoctions that may or may not be helpful as much as they're harmful.
But wait, now the greedy corporate owners. Now I'm a registered Republican,
mm-hmm.
and I vote and communitarian whenever I can. I'm of the belief that Theodore Roosevelt is one of the greatest Republican presidents, but the corporate greed you're talking about comes down right down to the bottom to consumer. greed. We want our packages, little packages, self-serve.
Well, I'm not so sure we do. We've told ourselves that we like them. But nobody ever went to the corporation and said, you know what? When I buy a CD, I really like cutting myself and breaking all my fingernails and trying to having to use a chainsaw to get it out of the package. So would you please package it that way? No, they packaged it that way because they thought it would help prevent theft. And
right.
So people begrudgingly accept the packaging, but nobody ever asked for it. And I'm sure that if they changed the packaging, then everybody would be receptive to it. I just don't think that we necessarily ask for that.
It's our choice then. It becomes our choice in how we choose to buy things and how we choose to vote with our dollars.
Well, we do accept them. That's the thing. See, we're complicit in it. And that's where our responsibility comes in.
Thanks.
I think it goes back all the way. Hello, this is Chris Andre joining the conversation.
Yes, indeed.
At the invitation of Melody, not just someone who wandered in off the street, although I did, in fact. I think a lot of it is related to the infantilization of the American citizen. Well, so many things that we used to come to accept as one of the hazards of being alive and functioning and aware in our own world, we're now protected from, and people tend to be very litigious when their safety net collapses. You see that as evidence of that, I would merely point to the ridiculous warning labels that have to be. I saw a paper shredder with a warning, a picture, you know, with a bar, a circle of a bar across it, that don't get your tie stuck in the paper shredder. And it was seriously there as a warning. Be careful not to. Okay.
If you're too dumb to know that, then you're too dumb to work in an office and wear a tie in the first place, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I think that the infantilization of the American populace begins yes, go ahead, caller.
Perhaps there's even a deeper thing, and I've said this for a while, the Robin Hood thing that we'd all know about among men generally, but look at it universally, all the way across the planet, whether you are the Islamists, whether you are the Boy Scouts, the Catholic Church, whatever you are, and I'm not just saying just those three, but tons of people, the answer is get your hands on, get to the boys. And having the boys from 25, even as a boy in my mind, being the sought-after demographic by this corporate horror that we're living under, you know, that and then raising up everything that is boy and saying, oh, boys will be boys, and it's war the whole nine yards. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, they accept it.
So this whole idea of everybody needs to act like they're somewhere between the age of 12 and maybe 22.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
And that's not only acceptable, it's encouraged because it means consumer dollars are spent.
Well, but also not only consumer dollars are spent, but those people, as I like to call them, tall children. You know, they look like adults, but they're not really fully accepting of responsibility and blah, blah, blah. We're much easier to control than a nation of fully educated, fully mature adults who take responsibility for their own decisions
and their own lives. Right. Thanks very much for listening.
All right. Thanks for calling. Because I think that, you know, this caller made a lot of really good points. You know, that it's not all just like, oh, you know, we want big government to fix everything. That's how we got in this mess in the first place. We have to take responsibility for our own lives, for our own families, for our own communities, for our own, you know, our own broken dreams or whatever, and address those. Well, I want to let everybody know it's almost 2 minutes after 8, and you are listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM, 100.7 FM in Corvallis, Albany, 91.9 in White Salmon. This is Positively Revolting Talk Radio. And there's no Ani today, but I am joined by the lovely and charming Chris Andre.
Good morning, everybody.
Who's had not enough coffee yet, but she's getting there. And we're talking about all the meta behind the news. You know, as I said earlier, we could argue endlessly about, oh, who's more corrupt and, you know, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, that's not going to help anything. It's time for some radical action, some radical analysis, looking behind all of this ugliness to ask ourselves, how did we get here? And, you know, where are we going and why am I in this handbasket? You know, how did I get in this handbasket and who made it anyway? And I don't want to be here. I want to go the other direction. And, you know, if we want to change our country, if we want to save the rest of the species on this planet from destruction, if we want to save our great-grandchildren from having a giant debt on their heads and no clean air to breathe and no clean water to drink, then we have to do something more radical than just flap our hands and say, oh, ain't it awful that Alito is going to get put on the Supreme Court. We have to be far more... We have to take a far more radical analysis and ask ourselves some hard questions. Did my complicity and my laziness and my fears have something to do with this? Did everyone's? And if so, how are we going to address that? How are we going to make sure that we don't get sucked in again by another, junior dictator like George W. Bush? Even if we get rid of him, there's going to be plenty of other people who'd like to replace him. How do we permanently guarantee that we can see through these people and have a society that works for everyone? And these are heavy questions.
I think we need to own it for starters. I think we need to say, this is our mess. We need to fix it. Going to Canada won't help. Canada is the way Canada is because of Canadians. America is the way America is because of Americans.
Well, you know, that famous joke about how Canadians are Americans without guns, you know. But that's really not true.
It's a very different world. You go Vancouver, read a paper. It's just amazing.
It is a very different atmosphere there.
I think possibly another cause of this, and simply, this is not so much just being doom and gloom, naysay, a harbinger of all the worst possible points of view, but I do think that identifying and observing the causes that Melody is talking about is a good place to start. And one thing that I've been looking at is the standardization of testing, the standardization of the way information is presented in schools. Kids are taught only to come up with the right answers. Nobody is ever taught to ask the right questions. Questioning is discouraged, in fact.
Well, that's so true. And, you know, the word educate comes from the Latin root educare, which means to lead forth. And we don't educate children in this country very well. We do teach them. There's a huge body of knowledge that they have to absorb. Obviously, this is a complex society, and there's just a lot of facts you need to know. But we don't teach them to do critical thinking. And that is so lacking. It's painfully obvious, and not just in among the young, but among people our age as well. It's been an ongoing problem, but it's getting worse.
Do we have a caller?
We do indeed. And let me give out the number one more time, 503-231-8187. And let's talk to a caller. You're on the air.
Yeah, well, people sound kind of down this morning. There's a kind of an edge of desperation in people's voices.
In our voices?
Well, I just only heard a fragment on the radio.
People say that many people live lives of quiet desperation. I like to think of myself as living a life of really noisy, loud desperation.
There you go.
I love it. This is why I asked Chris to sit in with me. I just love her one-liners.
No, yeah. This is a good time to be here. This is an exciting time. The opportunities to do things are limitless.
I've got some one-liners, too, but I'll save those for a better time.
It's not going to get any better, my friend. This is it.
There's some touching on responsibility that's been talked about. I think here in Oregon we need to not only worry about what's happening in Washington, but we need some responsibility for our own state and our own districts.
Boy, howdy.
And we're looking at a body of voters, progressive voters, say around Portland, who have actually gone out and voted for reactionary measures. They voted in favor of Enron and an election. They voted down a universal health care measure.
Oh, they voted for Measure 37.
Cutting down hours in our libraries. I mean, just a whole range of things. And if we're going to talk about strength in numbers, I mean, the numbers of people need to clarify their thinking or be a little more honest in their thinking.
Well, see, I think a lot of those people voted their own, their own monkey greed, you know,
their own
pocketbook,
feeling, right?
Their own, oh, not in my backyard, or, oh, I don't have kids in school, so I don't care about that, or, you know.
Well, I'm not just talking about the generality of voters. I'm talking about progressives also. I was chatting with the editor of the Alliance one day, and just various things came up. And there was a meeting of peace groups a couple of months ago in late November. Peace groups in Portland met, and people did not know one another. I mean, they had never met one another, and they'd never talked to each other. After 3 years of war, I mean...
We've been neglecting a lot of work that
what are we looking at here? You know, just a total non-communication among voters, among citizens, among peace activists.
Well, we don't have any real conversations about politics on TV. We have these we have sound bites, and then we have these scripted debates where there's no real opportunity for, you know, if you look back at the famous debates in the history of our country, like between Douglas and Lincoln and things like that, they would be horrified if they saw what we call a debate. There's no real debating going on. There's no real, you never really get down to the nitty-gritty and see what the candidate really thinks. It's just all these, like, you know, you put on the hairspray and the tie and you go out there and you make sure you don't say anything that the opponent can use against you, and that's not real. You know, and we don't ever really, politicians are afraid to be frank with the voters because then somebody will twist their words and, he said this and that. And, it's become a sham. The whole process has become a sham of what it was meant to be.
Speaking of politicians, I mean, we only have one representative in this state who's fairly consistent in his values and his ideals. And you have others who...
And who would you think? Who do you think that is?
Well, his name is Peter DeFazio.
Oh, I have to say Blumenauer is pretty good, too.
I like Blumenauer.
I think he and DeFazio both really stand out among the Oregon delegation.
I think if you talk to Blumenauer about trade issues, you know, you might be disillusioned, but that's...
Well, I'm certainly disillusioned with Wyden's position on trade issues.
My point is that we're getting mixed messages from these various people. They have a message if they broadcast in the regions around Portland, and then they have a special kind of mediator type of message that they use for Portland. You know, there's a kind of a doublethink going on there. And our senators are the worst offenders at that.
Oh, others, yes. Yes, they are.
I mean, we have senators who are real avid war supporters, but they don't say that when they come to Portland.
No, they don't. But, you know, in the past, other people have tried to run against them. Like one person who comes to mind was Harry Lonsdale, who was a little bit of an odd fellow. But, you know, he had a lot of really good ideas. And, basically because he was a political outsider, he was unable to break the glass ceiling, so to speak, and, you know, get into the Senate race. And
Well, Teresa Kaine ran against him. Him in 2004,
mm-hmm.
She got a lot of support from, like, common, ordinary folks.
I certainly voted for her.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and a lot of progressives just kind of ignored the whole campaign.
I know, it's just, you know, and the whole thing is that once people do get into the legislature or the Senate or the Congress, whatever, even the most well-intentioned person with a history of progressive activism behind them, I'm talking about you, Elizabeth First, when they go to Washington, turn into a whole other person.
Well, a person like DeFazio freely admits that he spends a large portion of his day on the telephone. He has to raise $1,000 a day just to keep going.
Yes, he does. And it's ridiculous.
It's absurd.
We need to move on, but I think you've made some great points.
Well, and I don't want to be negative, but it is the 13th.
Well, you know,
and also it is our reality that we're living in.
As I said earlier, you know, in ancient times, people thought of Friday the 13th as a lucky day, not an unlucky day. So it all depends on your perspective.
Yeah, awesome.
But thanks for your call.
Bye.
The number here, 503-231-8187. It's about 12 minutes after 8. We'll be here till 9, and then it will be time for the fabulous Marlena. So stick around. In the meantime, let's talk to this caller. You're on the air.
Hello, caller.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello, it's you. Good morning.
Yeah, hello. To counteract the unhealth in this country, I wonder if people could create in each state wisdom councils of young and old people to get something healthy going in this country. And also, I'd like to see some tribute or respect for Anne Rose Pierce, who died, and I understand has done a lot of great work for prison problems.
She
Thank
did
you.
Indeed. Thanks for your call. Yes, Anne Rose Pierce is a late KBOO member and volunteer who did the prison pipeline, and she did indeed do a lot of really important work because, you know, many people who are in prison are just, they feel forgotten. they feel just sort of cast aside and not really connected with the community that they were part of before they were incarcerated, and really made some serious strides in that area in terms of reaching out to those people, in terms of helping people who are non-incarcerated to understand the issues that the incarcerated face, which are, you know, it's easy to say, oh, well, prison is this way and that way when you're not in one. But, you know, to actually understand and connect to prison population is a lot more difficult, and Anne did some great work around that. And I do honor her for that. So I thank that caller for bringing that up. You know, one thing I want to talk about a little bit before we go to our next caller is the whole, you know, there's a lot of people on the left have been, there's a lot of conflict about whether our emphasis should be on straight politics, like being out there waving signs and, you know, making the phone calls and you know, beating the precincts, versus a more, for lack of a better term, a more woo-woo approach that some people have been pretty critical of those of us on the left who spend some of our time on a more energetic level, looking at issues and trying to work on that level. But I have to say, I think that's very effective, and all that work needs to be done. And there are a lot of changes of that nature that are happening right now in the world. There's a lot of talk about, oh, this is, you know, the end times and 2012. And first it was the millennium. Oh, we're all going to die on Y2K. Of course, that didn't happen. So now people are all focused on 2012 and it's the end of time. And, well, I think there is going to be a significant series of events around that time. And I think that they will see political events at that time that seem rather drastic. But I do think there's also a lot more going on than a lot of people perhaps appreciate in terms of just the whole energy around us in many different ways. We can see there's been a lot of seismic activity on the planet lately, a lot of earthquakes, obviously, there's been tsunamis.
There was a 4.9 under the water right off the Oregon coast. It made me think about the liquefied natural gas facility that they want to slap down in, of all places, Astoria.
Yes, that's not a good thing. So there's all kinds of things going on that perhaps might not be readily apparent to many people. That it's not just politics that is intense. That there's all that we're sort of all being caught up in this whirlpool and it's spinning faster and faster. We do. So we have three callers. So let's talk to one right now. You are on the air.
Me?
You.
Thank you. I want to talk about what seems to me a ritual of history that repeats and repeats, like from world wars, maybe earlier. Right now, see the Europe and the United States and the UN, they're all getting their bowels in an uproar about Iran. And they're getting ready to gang rape Iran like they did Iraq in 91 and ever since.
Mm-hmm.
And President Ahmadinejad, I love him. He's just contrast that smart guy against George Bush, what we got in the United States. Also, I want to say, a week ago, the whole world was kowtowing, praying for Ariel Sharon, the butcher of Beirut, to get over his stroke, the praying at the wall, etc., etc. And yesterday I heard on the news that Tariq Aziz, Saddam Hussein's deputy prime minister, who's been a prisoner of the United States, held in Iraq. He had a cerebral occlusion. He had a stroke. And the United States will not transfer him to a hospital.
What?
Yes, that was on the BBC.
Yeah, and, I saw something. They're not going to allow him to have any medical care?
What?
They're not going to permit him to have any medical care?
They say American military doctors are treating him, but he's in a cell. All those sycophants, Condoleezza Rice, Tony Blair, George Bush, Kofi Annan, the whole goddamn bunch of them.
They're all criminals.
And America, because we're supposed to be free, democratic, the citizens of America are really held responsible, but like in trials, they get off scot-free, like that guy, that captain that kicked two chained prisoners in Afghanistan to death, got acquitted.
I know.
Bye.
This is because I think that's the notion of American exceptionalism. In other words, whatever America does, or whatever American citizens...
By definition,
because it is American, that means it's good. So, whereas other people doing things that are morally, ethically, legally, in fact, questionable, are immediately hung out to dry. Americans do it, well, it's, you know... That's just what they do, and as Melody said before, boys will be boys. That sort of rationalization, which is utterly unacceptable, and it's far too much, I believe, accepted. It's just it goes down right to the individual. You see people all the time, you know, letting their dogs poop all over someone's lawn or on a sidewalk or something, and it's like, well, the law applies to everybody else, but not to me. You go in a shop and they let the kids run amok and break everything. And, well, isn't that cute? Isn't that adorable? Like, the little thing is so perky and inquisitive. It's okay for their kids to do that, but not other people's. It's okay for you to drive the SUV, the Hummer, whatever, but not other people. Because, you know, you're an environmentalist. You need it to go to Lake Tahoe. You need to go...
You need to drive your Hummer to the Sierra Club
That's
meeting, right?
Yeah. Exactly. So you need it because you are an environmentalist. That's why. But other people shouldn't be driving them.
As I said, denial is in America, as we've raised it in America, to an art form.
Yeah. Caller, are you there?
Hello?
How are you?
Hello. Good morning.
I'm right here. This is old LJ.
Hi there, LJ. How are you?
I'm wonderful. Thank you very, very much. Okay, number one, on a positive note, a big shout out to the Tryon Life Farm community.
Yes, fabulous that they made their nut. But they still need our support, you know.
Of course.
Because a lot of that stuff that they got were sort of like, was like a loan to tide them over, and now they still will need to pay those off. So,
Don't worry. We're gonna make paradise happen. All right. The citizens, I understand, according to Willamette Week, in 10 days, came up with $150,000.
Well, that doesn't surprise me. I think that the money's out there, and I think people really... I think that by calling all the radio stations and getting this real buzz going on, that they got people really excited, and people felt like, oh, I can make a difference. When people feel they can make a difference, they're much more motivated to do something.
I wrote them a little note. I sent them some money, and I wrote them a note, and I thanked them for drawing us together as a community, because that's what they did. All right. Now,
they're like the Cindy Sheehan of community farms.
Kind of, you know, and I think it's just so wonderful that they were able to save that. There should never, I mean, I can't believe that there was any question of doing a development up in that area. That's ridiculous.
The members of my community are lamenting the fate of the poor developers who were not able to build a tract of 23 luxury homes.
Oh, that's very sad. You know, nobody ever thinks of the developers. They're probably sitting in their condos in Mountain Park weeping into their white wine right now.
Oh, yes, they are. We sort of, the people of my community sort of had a little wake for them yesterday.
Well, that was I think that's really touching and considerate of you, LJ.
LJ, you ought to, after the farm gets going... Later in the summer, you could send them a basket of vegetables or something.
A box of wine.
Two vegetables.
Okay. Yeah, you could send them a box of wine. Maybe Senator Packwood has some left over in his closet that he'd give you.
Yeah, probably so. Okay, so the point of this is, although Washington, D.C. and our politicians stink like a barrel of rotten fish, right? The fact of the matter is that when you form community, you can do anything, all right? And personally, I'm a secessionist who strongly believes in the Republic of Cascadia. And I think that what we have to do, if you take a look around you and you see that all our politicians are simply corporate handmaidens, and the so-called representative democracy that we live in is such a scam and a sham, we really have to build our own culture, and we really have to build our own society, and we really have to form as community, and we really have to spend our money locally, and we really have to keep the money in the loop.
Yeah, we really have to stop doing things like shopping at Walmart.
And that is a base. That's a good philosophy. That's a good basic place to start from. And the more I think about it myself, the more I would be. I liked the idea of Cascadia too, and I think that might be, albeit a very radical solution, but it might be a solution to some of the problems that we're all facing. I think that the caller makes a very good point about community.
Mm-hmm.
For a long time, it seems to me that people are more or less, they're citizens of themselves. They're citizens of just the self and not a citizen of a community. What motivates many people, I don't want to make a generalization, but what motivates many people are concerned simply for the fortified mansion of the soul, as it were. We look out for our kids, but not other people's kids. Or we look out for our garden, but not, say, for example, a community garden. I'm willing to bet that the owner, the people that own that piece of property up in Seattle, have a lovely big garden. But that's their garden. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Do we have any other callers on the line? Or
okay.
Join in? We could invite.
So, bye-bye.
Thanks a lot for your call, LJ.
Have a wonderful day.
Thank
you too.
Right. Bye-bye.
It was inspiring.
It's 8:25, and this is Positively Revolting Talk Radio. No Ani today, but I'm Melody, and I'm joined by Chris Andre, and we're talking about the meta behind the news, and how did we get here anyway? How did we get in this handbasket, and where are we going?
Where are
and
we going?
Why are we in this handbasket at all? Why don't we just stop the handbasket, put on the brakes, get out, and start hiking back up the hill to where we need to be? And once we get up to the top, what are we going to do then? And how do we keep from ending up in the handbasket again? And, you know, why do we have a government if it doesn't serve us? And why are we in denial? Why do we tell ourselves these lies that we tell ourselves individually and collectively as a society to get ourselves in this situation? Why do we put up with no health care and no vacation and no job security? Why do we put up with crap in our water and crap in our air and breast cancer and everything wrapped in plastic? Why do we put up with non-organic food? Why do we put up with poor schools where our kids don't learn anything, don't learn how to think, don't learn how to be full human beings? Why do we put up with nuclear weapons? Why do we put up with criminals in the White House? Why? That's what we're talking about this morning. 503-231-8187. Caller, you're on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Your Zen call. It was so appropriate that LJ was before me. A couple of weeks ago, he ended your show with saying, I thought we were supposed to love one another as we love ourselves. And it got me to thinking that, we're so disconnected as a society. I really don't think that we have that love for ourselves.
Oh, I agree. I think that's a big part of our problem is that we don't realize who we really are, that we are... I think that many people's religious beliefs tell them that they're bad, or that they are lacking, or that maybe if they work really hard in about 20 lifetimes, they'll be acceptable. And, you know, that's a serious problem.
I think self-interest is often mistaken for love, but the fallacy there is, of course, that one can still indulge in a great deal of self-interest and still dislike oneself. Mm-hmm. And that's therein lies the rub.
Yeah.
So we have a lot of people that are very dissatisfied with themselves and their lives. However, they have made the self their castle, and they basically pulled up the drawbridge and they're hunkered down in there.
Mm-hmm. It's so true, and I think you're right, caller, that we don't. Not only do we not. You know, you can't really share love with other people if you don't love yourself, and that's where it all begins. And I think that many things in our society are geared to teach us to, as she said, be sort of self-absorbed or, self-dramatized or greedy or whatever, but not to love ourselves.
Well, all the advertising and marketing and so forth is directed at the individual. And
sort of like a shame, like, oh, you smell bad, you look bad, use this product.
A community is a true threat.
Yeah.
A community is a true threat to the companies, the corporations, and so forth that do the marketing, that do the PR. Because a community can be self-sufficient. It doesn't need those products. It can fend for itself. So all marketing is directed to the individual. We're told, you're different. You're you. Be an individual. Which is all great, except that you're buying into a sort of isolationist way of life. And I think that that's not an accident. That's quite absolutely the intention. There are many different levels of marketing and advertising, and I think that's definitely one of them, and I think it's been exploited very, very effectively.
So, caller, what do we do about this?
Well, there's a lot of things, I guess, spiritually, but the other thing I did want to offer was that I think the time has come to stop being against things and start being for things.
Exactly.
And by that, I don't mean to give in to everything that's going on, but to create what it is that we really want for ourselves.
That's so true. Well, you know, on this show, repeatedly over the years, we have said the very same thing. It's not enough to be reactive. We have to be proactive. And let's hear from callers about what does the world you live in want to live in look like? What kind of, you know, if you were in charge of the world, what would you do? And the phones don't ring because people don't know.
Yeah.
They're so busy just doing triage and sticking their finger in the holes in the dike lest the water burst out and drown them that they haven't even sat down and thought, well, if I was going to build the dike over again, how would I do it?
Right. And one last thing, here's a little food for thought for you. You had mentioned Y2K, and for a long time now, I've been connecting the dots, and Y2K didn't come off like we thought it was, the whole computer glitch and all that, but look what happened when we changed office. things really went reeling, and I just think it's really interesting. So anyway, I'm going to leave you with that, and thank you.
All right. Thanks for calling.
Bye.
It's 8:30, and this is Positively Revolting Talk Radio here on your community radio station, KBOO 90.7 FM. This is your station doing the people's work on the people's airwaves for the people, by the people, and not for corporate profit. And that's, you know, that's what we love about KBOO. This is, you know, this station embodies everything about community, all the good things, all the bad things. And, you know, that's what we're all about. 503-231-8187 if you'd like to contribute to this conversation about how do we move beyond, as the caller said, you know, just reacting to all these bad things in the world, and how do we do some radical gardening here and figure out what the source of our problems are and make some progress on healing them. So let's talk to a caller. You are on the air.
Hello, caller?
Hello?
Hello, that's you.
Welcome.
Okay. It's me, is it?
Yes.
Oh, all right. I'm sorry. My head is full of thoughts. I love what you've been talking about today, and I guess I want to put in a word for the woo-woo aspect.
Yes, I was going to get to that a little more, so I'm glad that you're going to dive into that.
Well, yeah. Just looking at what you've been talking about today, the themes, you know, how did we get here, and what are we going to do about it? I have experienced myself what happens when you do work with energy, and I imagine that someday, if our science can stay around long enough, we'll know what this comes from. But it really. It's what's one of the things that feeds community, I think. Once community begins, once one person says hello to another and people talk about mutual concerns and interests, there's a certain energy that arises. And if there aren't negative people in that energy set, then it grows and feels you can feel the power of it. And I'm hoping, and I'm kind of believing, because that's where my prayers have gone, that there has been this change. You you hear it in the media, who talks, which talks about things they would never talk about before, only Kabu would talk about. But more than that, it's a sense of hope, I guess, that what we're talking about means something, that there needs to be a change in the terrible direction that we've been going, and as a feminist, it certainly seems clear to me that it's patriarchy gone way out of control, you know, turning in on itself, and you know, we can see it, and it's a time for a balance in terms of male and female energy, which leads me to my next point. I think grandmothers all over the world, just because they've lived as long as they have and seen what they've seen and seen their sons killed, I think they're a potent force that we really need to listen to, and I'm hoping we'll have a chance to do more of that.
Yes, I'd like to see more groups like the Raging Grannies arise down here. They're fabulous. And, you know, it really, I think that who besides an older woman who is, you know, she's perhaps getting older and, you know, she knows her time on earth is shortening, and she sees all the children and grandchildren that she's loved and raised, you know, all the threats to them. And, you know, I really do think that older people do often, you know, just by virtue of having lived here many years, do acquire a certain level of wisdom that, you know, as Chris pointed out earlier, our consumer society is so focused on the 10 to 24 year olds or whatever, that marketing group. And so, you know, older people's wisdom is often just neglected or just
well, the thing
sort of
is
sneered at.
We have a right to say what we want, but the critical thing is we don't have a right to be heard. We don't have the opportunities and the vehicles for expression of ideas that challenge the, you know, accepted paradigm are fewer and fewer as media becomes more and more consolidated, and that is a huge obstacle. That's something else to be solved. But we don't want to start out seeing these things in terms, you know, problems and obstacles. It's all negative. Anything. It's not. It's a puzzle. It's something interesting. It's something to be solved, and something that we can learn a great deal and derive a great deal of enjoyment in the course of solving these problems. Very often, too, these are group efforts. So all of these problems that we have laid out before us, it's like a feast of trouble, and it's there to be solved. And it'll take a lot of people to do that. It'll take communication. And we have to remember that as far as getting the message across to the powers that be, they're not listening. And B, you don't have a right to be heard, because everything, the media owns the whole works. So talk as much as you can, and within your community, make the voice louder and louder. But I don't think that expecting George Bush to listen to grandmothers all over the world, I wish I could believe that would be a constructive thing to do. But I think it's more fun and exciting to be proactive, solve the problems, and solve them together.
Yeah, yes. First we have to get rid of George, then we can listen to the grandmothers.
That will be taken care of.
Can I make one more
certainly.
Point, and then I'll listen to you off the air. By talking about the wisdom of the grandmothers, certainly they, I believe, from talking to some older women, I'm one myself, but I mean older and wiser, I think they see George for the pathetic puppet of the evil, I'm using, you know, inflammatory language right now, but the evil empire of corporations. I don't think there's any denying that. It's where we put the focus. I think you said that, and I just wanted to reiterate it.
It's very true.
Don't worry about the inflammatory language. We're already inflammed here anyway. We probably couldn't get much more inflammed, so just go right ahead.
We're red and glowing. Hello? Oh,
call
I guess she's gone. Okay.
Thanks for your
that
comments.
That was some really excellent points there. And it is true that, you know, we really need everyone in the community. And I think one of the problems I see is that a lot of young people today, you know, in their 20s on down, it's almost like they live in a whole different world within ours. I mean, they live on the same planet. They live in our same houses. and they ride on the same bus, and, you know, you see them walking around, but they're in another reality. And I think that that's deliberate on the part of, the consumer movement has kind of, partly it's technology, because there's so many new technologies like iPods and all that sort of thing that a lot of older people don't embrace, but it's like youth are almost like in their own reality, kind of separate from older generations, and that's a really new phenomenon. They've always, you know, youth has always had different views than older people, and there's always been these conflicts between generations, but not in the sense that technology divides them so seriously. And I think that's something that we all need to, that's a river we all need to cross. I think older people need to embrace those technologies so they can participate in the same reality with young people, because without incorporating them, I mean, this is going to be their world, and, you know, we can't afford to live in different parallel universes with our kids and our grandkids.
Yeah.
I was going to take another caller. Mm. Let's do it. Okay, caller, you're on the air.
Hi. First of all, that last caller was absolutely excellent.
She always is.
Mm-hmm. And I agreed with all those points. I think one thing to keep in mind is that there's something quite easy that we can all do, which is to start voting with our dollars.
Absolutely.
And that's something that is just so commonly overlooked. It blows my mind when yet people in the next breath say, money makes the world go round. And I'm like, well, what are you feeding here? Are you feeding, you know, People's Co-op or Food Front, mm-hmm. or one of these local organic sustainable businesses, or are you feeding the beast?
Are you buying name brand corporate food, or are you buying small companies who are here in Oregon and Washington or close by? You know, all those things.
That is, I think, an absolute key element in affecting any sort of positive change. I completely agree with you, caller.
Are you in everything that we buy? You know, it's like I try to buy as much as I can secondhand. Because that, not only does it reuse something that's already manufactured, but it denies some big box store some money. You know, if I can get a ladder or whatever from my neighbor for $10, then I'm not giving it to Fred Meyer or whoever else, whatever store I would go shop at.
Right. And the other thing I wanted to say is, I don't know whether you guys wasted your time reading that Lars Larson editorial.
Oh, I
that came
read
out about
Larson's name on it.
Right, right. Well, perhaps you're wiser than I, but I read that it was about the farm, so I couldn't help myself. Train wreck phenomenon. So I read the whole thing, it's a commune, and we shouldn't support it. Blah 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 blah. All this, you know, hate, and he's saying, oh, $200,000, what a waste. And I heard someone say the other day that they might be getting rid of the brass free water fountains that, you know, is one of the most beautiful, wonderful, treasured childhood memories, and continue to smile whenever I see them as an adult. And I heard that they might be going away because people are going, oh, $400 every time we replace it. And I'm like,
what?
You know, if we had any money in our coffers, cough, cough, taxed our corporations.
Yes, if we repealed Measure 5.
Thank you, exactly. I think that should be, in my opinion, that should be the number one movement for local progressive change, should be the repeal about Measure 5 and the rolling back of all the regressive property taxation that's happened since then. And if we started taxing our corporations, you know, and started, you know, not just giving land away to Nike or, you know, letting Enron steal our energy, mm-hmm. and defraud us, and then go, oh, 200,000, some hippies, blah, blah, blah. It's like, give me a break. You know, it's pennies. Let's be consistent across the board. I don't think that there should be, you know, free handouts with no return. But on the other hand, clearly, you know, Tryon Life is adding something huge to the community
of
and giving us
is.
A real chance to move forward. And anyone who doesn't see that is really locked into, you know, this fantasy world that a lot of people choose to live in as opposed to the real world.
Exactly. Well, it's preventing development. It's protecting
right.
an ecosystem. I mean, if there was development up there, can you imagine with all the rains we're having what kind of flooding and what kind of mudslides would be going on? I mean, I just think that's just, there's so many reasons to support that, the farm being there instead of a bunch of stupid condos. But yeah, I mean, I think it's outrageous that people would even consider removing the bubblers. Those are a trademark of Portland that they were given by a pioneer person who, you know, who lived in Portland and loved the people and wanted to provide them with the water, and the water was so tasty and yummy, and so he wanted everyone to be able to drink it. And it's just the mere thought of removing them.
This is what I started to refer to as, I remember when all of this used to be farmland phenomena.
Mm-hmm.
every time you drive through a really, really viciously ugly strip mall, or you drive through some kind of housing project type development somewhere, people look out the window and they go, I remember when all this used to be farmland.
Yep.
Well, you know what? It still would be, except people do not mm-hmm. make decisions based on the good of the next generation. They don't. They make decisions based on immediate gratification, so to speak, financial gratification. So many of the things that we've lost were lost for little or no reason at all. It
exactly.
just seemed like a good idea at the time, and they went out and they did it. Then once it's gone, you are left with your regrets. All you can do is say, I remember when I was a kid, and they had these great brass drinking fountains, and you could describe them, and there'll be calendars with pictures of what it used to look like in the old days. Well, making the right decisions and taking responsibility for the decisions that we make as a community has fallen by the wayside. We allow our decisions to be made by groups that are that do not have our best interest in mind when those decisions are made.
And then they do their best to avoid responsibility for them later.
Because I remember when all this used to be farmland.
Well, a lot of people who are still alive
remember
when it used to be forest, before the forests were cut down.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's a lot to be. And think, Colin, you've made some really great points.
I just wanted to make one last point, and that is that I say that, you know, not only tax corporations, but tax them at a fairly steep level. And what's the worst thing that'll happen if we tax corporations heavily in Oregon? They'll leave.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, there's some things that you can argue, like some of our high-tech industry that might be so important to Oregon that you can make some kind of argument why we shouldn't get rid of them. But there's other things like Walmart and these other
mm-hmm.
siphons to just take dollars out of our state and put them in the hands of some Jack Abramoff lobbyist lookalike.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, we'd be much better off.
If we would be so much better off.
Small businesses
what would happen
generate
is,
more taxes anyway.
Absolutely.
So
small
cares?
Businesses would come back in a huge way.
Yeah.
It's just like you have these huge, towering, evil, nasty trees of corporations, and our little seedling of healthy. That is an insult to trees, and I take it back. I was thinking of, like, the evil trees
yes.
and, you know, the Lord of the Rings,
yes,
those ones
yes.
that went around attacking people, the, you know, the black alder and the willow guy and whatnot. So, yes, that was an insult to trees, and I take it back, lest a tree smash through the window
he
and attack me.
He didn't mean it, trees.
Yeah, I didn't mean it, trees. These big towering buildings that don't allow the seedlings of local business to go. How about that? That's
yes,
a better
yes,
analogy.
Very true.
And so I say tax, you know, like, let's tax them. Let's start, you know, if they're going to be, if they have all the rights of an individual, I say you apply all the liabilities, taxation, legal liabilities, none of this, like, you know, I mean, I can't imagine going to a courtroom and going, oh, I'd like to change my name and disavow all my creditors. That's all right, right? Mm-hmm. I'll reincorporate my name and.
Isn't that special?
Yeah, it's very
special.
Well,
you could become Joe Blow Inc., you know, and then
right.
it's just. Well, that's
right.
another thing, is that we have to have somebody with cojones on the Supreme Court to admit that it's a fiction.
Absolutely.
That corporations are persons, and that was really not a decision made by the Supreme
Worst
Court.
Worst idea ever.
It was in a clerk's note. The clerk who had an agenda when he wrote up the decision put in a note at the beginning that the Supreme Court justices had decided in that case that corporations were persons, when in fact they emphatically had not done so. So
absolutely.
it's a complete myth, and that people have been operating in on one of these myths because it suited them. And we need to get someone with, like I said, the cojones to stand up and say no.
Or the ovaries.
Let's look back at, yes, yes,
go.
Or the ovaries to look back and say, look, this is what it says, and we're overturning this because they're not persons.
Absolutely, and I think that people need to look at the underlying root. You know, fascist resurgence has happened since the beginning of the Industrial Revolution. I
mm-hmm.
said this earlier this week, and I'll say it again because I want to hammer this point down. Until we move away from the profit as the sole arbiter for all human relations, which is what we're increasingly moving towards.
Mm-hmm. We're turning into Ferengis.
Right, right. It's totally ridiculous. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. We're turning into big, oversized ear, freakish things that just
value profit,
lust, and pleasure, and nothing that's sustainable. And I think it's going to happen. I think that the farm and Sharon are symbolic of two different things. They're symbolic of sustainability is more and more taking deep root and growing and spreading outward and rebuilding itself and replicating itself as life does, and nothing else really does. And I think that the fascists are really, they're getting old. They're running out of steam. They're
mm-hmm.
running out of oil. And they're desperate. And they're actually quite scared. And the fact that they're tapping the Quakers just goes to show actually how powerful you know, the peace and sustainability movement is. And
well,
and
of course, they're trying to prolong their reign by
right.
engendering fear in us, and we just really need to not buy into it.
Absolutely.
Thanks
Thank
a
you.
Lot for your
yeah.
call.
Bye-bye.
That gave me an idea. I just have to put this out here. This is our listeners everywhere. I think it's time for us to levitate the Nike campus.
Can we just levitate Phil Knight instead
very,
and drop him over
no,
like a deep marsh someplace?
No, Melody. If we could levitate the Pentagon, we can levitate the Nike campus. We just have to decide when we
okay.
want to do it.
Well, we'll organize that, and we'll announce it on here when we're going to get together and levitate
yes.
Nike. Yes, that'll be coming up. Projects for the Witches for the coming year in 2006. Okay, we have about 12 minutes left here. So if you have something to say, don't hesitate. Call now, 503-231-8187. And let's...
We have three callers, so callers,
yes,
try to keep, you know, limit your remarks a little bit.
Yes, indeed.
And so we can get more people
we'll
in.
We'll be tidying up our calls and making them a little shorter so that we can squeeze everyone in. So caller, you're on the air.
Hey, good morning to y'all.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, first of all, here to the most recent caller. I love the optimism. It's nice to turn and hear progressives think optimistically about the future. And I think that we do have a bright future ahead of us. We just got to get through these really dark days. In regards to how we got into this basket and where we're going, I've been thinking greatly about, you know, power dynamics.
Mm-hmm.
And this whole notion of external power versus internal power.
Power over versus yeah. power with, yes.
Yeah. And, you know, everything I think rolls down to, you know, power dynamics and that whole master and slave routine being played out ad infinitum forever and ever. And I'm just really tired. I don't want to be a master and I don't want to be a slave.
Well, it boils down to what a great work that if anyone has not read it, I highly recommend The Chalice and the Blade by Rhian Eisler. She delineates the difference between a partnership society and a dominator society. And I think that's basically what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Whether or not people engage in society as partners with others or whether they engage in trying to, like, you know, have this one-up, I'm king of the hill kind of a dynamic, which is, of course, what is going on in our society to a great extent.
And we're not taught, schools don't teach children to form those kind of mutually beneficial partnerships, and that's just the trouble. It's all competition. So I'm wondering what it would take to get that kind of a paradigm shift.
I do believe we lost our caller, but he made some great points while he was with us, and I think that that's an excellent point that we need to look at our power dynamics not only in politics, of course, but down to the family level. How do we relate to our roommates, our partners, our children, our coworkers, ourselves? I mean, do we look in the mirror in the morning and say, oh, God, you look like hell today. What a hag. My God. Or do we look in the mirror and we think good thoughts about the person we see there? You know, it kind of starts at the personal level and moves outward. And, you know, is that that phrase in the 70s is still so true. The personal is the political and vice versa. So, you know, it all does start, you know, with our self-image and with our regard for ourselves. If we don't respect ourselves, then we're not going to respect each other. And why are we living in a society where we don't respect ourselves in the first place? I mean, the whole point of a human experience is to have a positive experience and not to go around hating ourselves and each other all the time. So, you know, why do we have our society structured like this? Why don't we create a society for ourselves that makes us happier? I mean, that's the whole point of being alive,
yeah.
right? Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Okay, let's go to our next caller. You're on the air.
Yeah, first of all, I'd put a cap on how many gasoline-producing cars could be produced in the next few years.
Don't worry.
I think there'll be a natural consequence of that.
I would insist that the oil companies look into new technology. I would make sure that schools and other public institutions produce their own food, as well as prisons and such like that, so that people can not only get back to the earth and touch the earth, but they could have better diets, because better diets are proven to be beneficial to people's emotional and
Absolutely.
Mental well-being.
Absolutely.
I would not insist, but I would definitely encourage that people have fewer children, because I think the population on this earth is a run amok. And I would make sure that as much money as we're spending on researching medical diseases, we spend as much money healing the environment and the earth. And also I would have to insist that people that that break the environmental laws, that they aren't just fined, but that they have to put labor in so that they don't just throw a few dollars at it. They actually have to get dirty, and they have to wallow in their own filth.
Go out there and dig all the contaminants out of the river or whatever. Yes.
And I would also suggest that corporations and such have more pets in the building.
Well, that's an interesting concept.
I think often people get removed in their cubicles and they become part of the machine, and pets have a way of not only benefiting your health but your mental well-being too. And you see that, you know, when you see a cat rolling around and playing with a ball, you take yourself out of the mindset, that the robotic mindset that you're in, and you see that life is to be enjoyed.
We might have to have allergenic and non-allergenic sections in workplaces for that, though.
I've worked in places where I'd really like to see a 16-foot boa constrictor on the premises at all times.
to eat the vendors
we'll
that are bothering you, huh?
We'll call him Fred.
But I think that's there's some really good points there. Basically, you're just calling for a rehumanization of our workplaces and our society, which I think is so.
And how
important.
Would you affect that? And how? And what about the people that don't want that? Believe it or not, there are people out there, and plenty of them, that like things fine just exactly as they are.
Well, then.
And that, by the way, they don't want to be educated.
They don't want retrained.
Just
yes.
Going in the direction that they are going.
That's true. I think that there's a lot of. I think that's true.
How do you reach them?
Well, you start at the school level.
Yeah, but the schools are federally private schools?
Well, I think
People determine policy. People talk to their school board and determine policy. And if these things get brought up, then it'll start snowballing.
Yeah.
Why can't children produce their own food?
Well,
Alice
Waters,
she's a world-famous chef, and she insisted that the children at the school that her daughter went to start producing their own food.
I think it's a great idea.
And if that happened all over the world, then people would get connected not only with the earth but with their own bodies, and they would see that there's a correlation of what they do to the earth translates into their own bodies and their own minds. And if you start brainwashing those children to be good,
but there will be resistance. I can guarantee you there'd be parents who say, well, my little Johnny or my little Susie doesn't want to get their fingernails dirty,
right.
And I don't, you know, I pay you to like feed them lunch, and there definitely would be some resistance. But those are the people that we need to convert.
Well, of course, there's resistance to everything, but just because there's resistance, you don't
doesn't
throw up your hands and
say,
oh, it's not feasible.
It's so true. Well, I think we only have 4 minutes left, so you've been making some great points, but I'm going to let you go and try to squeeze another caller in. Did you have one more thing you wanted to say?
Yes, hello.
Oh, okay. Well,
hello.
I guess if she did, we won't know, because this is
a
new caller. Hi, caller. You're on the air with us. What's going on?
Yeah, they plugged me right in. Thanks for your defense of the Benson bubbler.
Oh, I'm just appalled that anybody would even consider removing them.
Yeah, that's what they called that Simon Benson, and Benson Polytechnic High School was named after him. And in terms of the future, the city of Portland just this week voted to sue the EPA.
Yeah.
For forcing it to do expensive filtration and to cover the Mount Tabor and Washington reservoirs.
And I support that. I don't support covering the reservoirs. I support fighting the EPA.
Right, but it's so gutsy because Portland is the only one so far. They hope to have more, but it really shows leadership, because the Bush administration, which is opposed to unfunded mandates, meaning we fund it, not them, is pushing this on one of the cleanest water supplies in the world. So I just wanted to make that point, and thanks for bringing up the bubblers.
Okay, well, thanks for your call.
Bye.
Yeah, I really think that, you know, what I'd like to see the city do is I'd like to see them stand up to Enron, which is, to my mind, one of the biggest no-brainers ever. Of course, we should take over PGE and have a public utility set up with that. And I don't understand why people think that's a bad idea.
I do. It's the Oregonian, the editorial.
Well, I know, but the why people would even consider that,
yeah.
The general populace would think that was a bad idea.
I think sometimes it almost seems, Melody, you know, that people like to be hoodwinked.
I guess.
I do.
I really don't get
it. They want to be fooled, it seems like.
Well, I think that, once again, it gets back to the idea of not wanting to have... If you don't make a decision, then you don't have to take any responsibility. You can rail against the politicians and say, oh, those evil politicians did it, and they did it to me. I'm such a victim. Boo-hoo,
right.
Woe is me. It's not my fault. Everybody's out to get me. Everything that happens that's bad in my life is someone else's fault. You know, the classic... not taking responsibility posture that so many Americans like to adopt, because then they can tell themselves that they're good people. Well,
sure, it's
you know,
popular.
We really need to start growing up and taking responsibility for, you know, our own thoughts, our own desires, our own needs in life. And I'm not saying that everyone has to be self-sufficient and grow all their own vegetables and screw everyone else. Not at all. I'm just saying we need to take responsibility individually and collectively for the world that we want to live in. We need to take responsibility for our own happiness, basically, and everyone else's collectively that we associate
yes.
with, you know. And no one, there's no magic wand. No aliens from outer space are going to beam a happiness ray at us and fix everything for us. We
right.
have to fix the mess we've
yes,
made ourselves.
Exactly. No one is, Canada's not going to rescue us. France isn't going to rescue us.
Heck no, not after we've insulted them.
Aliens are, it's up to us to do it and not go somewhere else and hide from it. Because, you know what, if... All the really good, even the good people who aren't good, but the people who have an insight into this, all the people that are deeply disturbed by the current situation took off, who'd fix it? And then you would be unleashing a real monster on the rest of the world. So
yeah.
let's decide not to be victims, take responsibility and say, you know,
There are no easy answers.
I want to be part of the solution. I want to solve
yes.
the problem.
We just need to do our part to create the world that we choose, that we want to live in. And so I want to thank you for sitting in with me this morning. It's been great. And Ani will be back with us next week. So until that time, everybody, I want to urge you all to love yourself, respect yourself, love your neighbor, and keep on being positively revolting.